This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. If you've ever visited Prescott Park in Portsmouth, maybe you've walked out to the pier overlooking the Piscataqua River and seen the plaque that says, "From here you can see the tide turn like a door on its hinges."
From here you can see the tide turn like a door on its hinges. We're just going out. Do you want anything from the ocean?
That's the voice of Robert Dunn reading his poem, From Here You Can See. Dunn was Portsmouth's poet laureate from 1999 to 2001, and he was both a fixture and an enigma, often seen walking the streets of the rough-edged town, long before Starbucks and the gift shops took up residence, or the New York Times praised its absurd selection of restaurants and cafes. The writer Catherine Towler moved to Portsmouth at the onset of that boom and was intrigued by Dunn, living in a single room without an electrical outlet and selling his hand-bound poetry collections for a penny. Her new book, The Penny Poet of Portsmouth, recounts their unfolding relationship as her life and the seaside town transformed. And Catherine Towler, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you, Virginia. It's good to be here.
So you first saw Robert Dunn there, kind of shambling along the streets, brushing by you with barely an acknowledgement at one point. You assumed he was homeless, but he wasn't. Who was he, and how did he live?
So Robert was a poet, and that was the primary focus of his life, was his writing. And he read a great deal. He was one of the most widely read people I have ever met. And he worked a few hours each afternoon at the Portsmouth Athenaeum. And, well, I saw him first on the streets when I moved to Portsmouth, as you describe, and then I met him as my neighbor. I discovered that he lived next door to me, where he had the single room in the house he rented. And through meeting him as my neighbor and then also as a fellow writer, that I got to know him a little bit. He was a hard person to get to know.
You write about him seeming to you so much like a person from another century and this town from another century. And there's a lot of connection about people and place here in your book. You're both living in this scrappy, you know, somewhat rundown town as it was becoming gentrified. The J.J. Newbery's closes, becomes a Gap. The A&P closes. But he was, as you came to find out, quite treasured in this town. Why?
He was a person who put his art first. He put his poetry first, and I think people admired that. And people knew him because he didn't have a car. He walked everywhere. So he was someone you saw almost daily walking around town. He was someone people simply knew as part of the streetscape of Portsmouth, and he had a wonderful wit. He was very, very funny, very smart, a brilliant mind, and people admired him for leading a very alternative life, and for writing his wonderful poems, which he shared at poetry readings and in his little penny books, which he sewed by hand. And he would sell them on the street in Market Square. If you happened to run into him and he had a new book, he would pull it out of the pocket of his trench coat, which he always wore. He was famous for that trench coat and his flat cap.
And I think you tried to give him, what, a dollar once for one of his penny books?
Well, when he had a new penny book, and I ran into him in Market Square, and he took it out of his pocket, and he said, "I have that book for you." And I didn't realize at first which book. And then I realized, oh, it's his new little penny book, which I had been eagerly waiting for and looking forward to. And I think I tried to give him $5, and he refused that. Anyway, he finally, I think, did end up taking a dollar from me.
He was the kind of guy that gave the town character on some level, but really inscrutable in some ways. But you did get to know him in at least a tentative way. Why was that so surprising to you?
I was surprised, I guess, because at the end of his life, Robert was quite ill. And he was ill for 3 years, in and out of the hospital and the rehab unit at the assisted living facility. And he turned to me and in some ways almost appointed me as his next of kin, the person who the doctors and the social workers had authorization to talk to or to call in an emergency. And I puzzled over why me. So I guess that was what was surprising me. He was such a private person. He wasn't that easy to get to know, and yet he did open up to me to a degree in those last years.
Well, this is a man who never appeared to need friends. I mean, certainly didn't want charity from anybody or even health insurance from his employers at the Athenaeum. But he was a heavy smoker, had some pulmonary troubles, emphysema. And this failing health kind of increased this vulnerability that vanished, that careful distance he had. I think you call it the silent insistence that the world came to him. There's a real power in that, isn't there, in that kind of remove?
Oh, sure. There's a great power in it. And Robert sort of dictated the terms on which he would open up to people, and he dictated the terms in which he would share his writing. So he was not like many writers looking for fame. He did not care that much about how his work was published. He wanted to connect with readers. And so he did remain an enigmatic person, and there is a sort of power in that, you know. He controlled how people knew him and what they knew about him.
That kind of leads us to another, I think, really powerful theme in the book. There's this tension in your own life as you tried to stick to your writing while now married, you know, learning how to be married, now a member of a community. Could you read a bit from the book about that?
Well, this is from chapter 11, and it's after Robert has become sick, and so he's not able to walk around town as much. And at the beginning of this chapter, I'm walking into town on a December evening, and I'm thinking about how Robert is missing on the streets of Portsmouth and how I am missing seeing him there. There's an irony in our looking to someone like Robert, who deliberately defined himself outside the mainstream of human life, to tell us about the living of that life. This person watching from the sidelines should, it seems, be the least qualified to illuminate our experience, but this is what we ask of writers. The ones who produce the most lasting books are often ruthless at separating themselves from the world. In this riddle lies the uncertainty at the heart of the writer's work. We have no right to make claims for the rest of our human brothers and sisters, but this is precisely what we do. We plant a flag at the summit of human experience. We assert that though we might be quiet, watchful types prone to lurking in corners, we have some insight into the lives of our more active neighbors that gives us the license to tell their stories. Solitude is not a recipe by itself for good writing, nor does good writing necessarily require solitude. But often when these elements come together at the highest levels, something sublime occurs. Robert is a good example. He was beloved as a poet among those who knew his work in New Hampshire and beyond because he had his finger on the pulse of a few significant truths and translated them into language that, though the voice might have been quirky and unpredictable, was instantly recognizable as our own common language. He stood outside the world while giving it back to us whole.
That's Catherine Towler reading from The Penny Poet of Portsmouth. This is her memoir, charting her unfolding relationship with the poet Robert Dunn. It's an elegy of sorts to an eccentric poet and for the town, which inspired and ultimately took care of him. He died in 2008. Well, Robert was reclusive, seemed not to care about the success and the recognition and the material trappings of fame, which made you, you're writing and publishing three novels, you're going out on book tours, feel somewhat suspect in his eyes. Now, what did that mean for you?
He was a challenge. You know, the way Robert lived his life with such incredible integrity was a challenge, I think, to anyone, but particularly to me as a writer. He made me think about what was most important and why was I writing? What was it I most wanted? So did fame come first or did the writing come first? He put the writing first. He wasn't doing it to get recognition from others. He was doing it for the pure art of it. And that was why I felt sometimes that he was observing me and how caught up I was in caring about what others thought of my writing and trying to, you know, impress other people with my work instead of simply focusing on the work itself and doing the work that I needed to be doing without thought of how it would be received.
But it seems like you observed a cost in being that single-minded about your work, too.
I did. So for me, the process of writing the book was coming to understand my own admiration for Robert. I had admired him so much in the first years when I knew him, and I held him up as an ideal. But when he became sick, I saw the cost of that kind of single-minded devotion. I saw the cost of how he had lived financially on so little. He did not have a family. He did not have a partner. And he was very alone at the end of his life, at a time when he needed other people. And so it made me reevaluate my admiration of him and think about that ideal of, you know, the single-minded devotion to your art. And it made me appreciate perhaps the more complex nature of my life, the fact that I had gotten married and had a life that was more full of people than his life.
Do you think he really didn't care if anyone read his poems, if they were recognized?
No, I think he did care. He wanted his poems to be read by people. He wanted to share them, and he found ways to do that. But he made, in some ways, a calculated choice to do that in the small scale in New Hampshire and Portsmouth, and not to get caught up in trying to gain recognition more widely.
I think there's a point in the book where you reflect on buying your home with your husband and think, like, we got in at just the right time, right? Before all the property values skyrocketed and, you know, the upscale chain stores had moved in. And I couldn't help but wonder if his life was perfectly timed for that place. You know, would it be possible for a writer to live as he did, so close to the bone in today's Portsmouth?
No, it wouldn't be possible. His rental situation, renting a single room in a house within walking distance of downtown today, I think would be virtually impossible to find a place that was that affordable. And you're right, it was an accident of time for him as well, that he came to Portsmouth when he did, when it was a place where you could live more reasonably. It had not been as discovered and gentrified and developed as it has been today.
Just in closing, I'm thinking of that sort of hunger for, you know, fame, recognition. Knowing this, going through the process of reflecting on Robert's life and the community that he had around him or didn't have around him, how do you look at that sort of quest or hunger for success now?
Well, I think my view of it is also tempered by being older and realizing that success in the eyes of the wider world can be very fleeting. It can be satisfying, but not something that will lead to long-term contentment or happiness. And so I think I have made a greater peace in my own mind with trying to be a bit more like Robert. I'm not quite like him, but trying to be a bit more like him in focusing on the work and trying to make the work of the highest quality I can make it. Obviously, I want to get published, and I want my work to go out into the world. But trying to stay very focused on the work itself in doing that.
Well, Catherine Towler, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us about it.
Thank you very much, Virginia.
Catherine Towler is author most recently of the memoir, The Penny Poet of Portsmouth, and she's reading from and talking about the book all over the region in the coming weeks. She'll be at the Portsmouth Public Library this evening, at Phillips Exeter Academy tomorrow, and at Water Street Books in Exeter on May 5th. More details are at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.